Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Got a good show today. We have, we have two separate parts. We have a clergyman from Chicago. He is the pastor of the largest Presbyterian church in Chicago. He is very, very much on the side of you guys, Eddie Irish, and of course, the CFS. He's going to be in the second part of the show. First part, Jim and I are going to talk about the situation in the Middle East, that Biden is taking credit for brokering the peace, but apparently the people in the Middle East are pretty much laughing at him and saying he had nothing to do with it. Is that true, Jimmy?
So the news reports are the Biden administration basically stepped in to broker the ceasefire. But apparently, according to Israelis and, of course, Egyptians and Palestinians, the Egyptians brokered the ceasefire. It's tentative because there's still, you know, there's unrest right now in Jerusalem. And, of course, Netanyahu, the prime minister in Israel, has said that if, in fact, rockets start flying again, then they're going to respond very, very strongly. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it is an interesting angle where the administration has had a couple of different, the Biden administration has had a couple of different statements on it, supporting Israel's right to defend themselves, but not saying anything about the Palestinians. And then, of course, attempting to intervene in some way through phone calls. But my take on it is that they're losing influence because it really has undermined the kind of growing peace efforts that were happening in the Middle East under the Abraham Accords.
Yeah. Well, actually, Trump really handled that very, very well, I thought. I mean, you can say what you want about Trump, but the situation in the Middle East, in my opinion, was really, really moderated under under Trump. And they don't seem to be doing very much. Joe Biden doesn't seem to be doing very much right now, other than telling reporters to stand in front of the car he's driving so he can quote-unquote floor it. That's not an opinion on my part, by the way. I have that on video. And I know, I'm sure that Biden was joking, but that's a very poor joke for somebody in his position, and I cannot renege my statement on that one.
Al, the interesting contradiction here is that had Donald Trump been ever made some sort of a comment like that, it would have been front page news on New York Times, Washington Post, headlines on CNN, MSNBC. Every one of the talk show hosts would have been continually talking about it. And unfortunately, Republicans would have been trying to justify it and come back because they fail to understand how well and how far the left's going to use these things to even jokes. If we go back to what's happened in the Middle East, the very important change that the Trump administration pushed forward and actually was successful in was saying that the Palestinians, that by using that old argument, that people continued to be kept in this cycle of violence, where the Israelis respond, the Palestinians look like the victims, and the Palestinians take action, and then everybody was supposed to rally around. What the Trump administration did was say, let's forget about the Palestinians as a center problem. Let's talk about economic development. Let's talk about diplomatic relations. Right. Let's talk about expanding relationships in the long term that will benefit the Palestinian people and eventually lead to a positive solution.
Right.
By doing that, it took away this dynamic. And what has happened is the Iranians have been emboldened by the Biden administration. The Iranians support Hamas directly, and they've went ahead. The Biden administration has looked weak by reinstating $235 million worth of aid on the 21st of April this year to the United Nations refugee program in order to fund and support Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And of course, the Iranians have been backing them and restocking their arms and supplies. So basically, what the Trump administration had done was cut them off, made them less relevant in the discussion. The Biden administration is now back into the cycle and created the situation where they become the focal point and the violence continues to turn.
Well, all I can say, and I know I'm going to piss Eddie off when I, by saying this, and probably CFS and probably everybody else, certainly certain members of my family, but I have to say that it is what it is, and there's nothing that I can do about it. I spoke with David Rubin briefly yesterday, by the way. He is the mayor of, former mayor of Shiloh in the Gaza Strip. David will be on the show next week. He is a very, very decent human being whose sole goal in life right now is the Palestinian Children's Fund. He is trying very, very hard to make things better for the kids over there, which I think is really commendable. Anyway, I'll probably get lambasted from certain people for saying that also. Well, but anyway, I'm not sure why.
Let me just give an example. The Israeli Defense Forces released an audio recording. Before they have taken out buildings that Hamas has used as military targets and support, they warn the residents to get out. They give them a period of time, an hour, maybe 2 hours.
Right.
In this audio recording, the Israeli forces and their interlocutors are warning Hamas members to empty the building. The Hamas members say, "We're not going to leave the building." They said, "You need to get out of the building. We're going to destroy the building. You have children in there." And basically, and I'm summarizing this, the Hamas leaders, the people in the building, said, "You can kill the children. That's fine. It'll be on you." And he says, "What do you mean?" And basically, I want to ensure that people understand the Palestinians train their children very early to be martyrs. They educate them in racial hatred. They educate them very strongly. There's numerous 60 Minutes reports, all kinds of major mainstream media news that has shown this. The world forgets it, and what they're doing is creating hate, and what we're seeing is an expansion of that coming to the United States, division, and unfortunately,
of course,
it creates a cycle there that you can't stop.
Right, right. That is something that I cannot convince certain people that is actually happening, and I'm the bad guy. But anyway, you know, it is what it is. I said I was going to give the Biden administration, I should maybe say the Harris administration, until September to see how this whole thing shakes out. So I fully intend to do that. I'm going to give it until September, and we are right now only in April. Things aren't, anyway, so I have no comment whatsoever on the Democratic administration right now. I just hope they succeed in making America a better place. So far, that I don't think that's really happened, but that's just my opinion. Jimmy, we got to take a break here in less than a minute for the our sponsors to be able to air their wares, for lack of better terms. We appreciate people who are paying the radio stations through sponsorships for their products, because I think we have something very, very important to say here, Jim. I really do. I am very, very sad that this happened in the Middle East. Now, I have done some research on it, and according to Associated Press, war crimes are actually being committed by both sides. That's what I want to get into after we have our commercial break, because that's something you are very, very familiar with. You guys are going to be right back with Jim McKinney.
You're
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing my discussion with Jim McKinney. Really appreciate Jim's input on this. He is very definitely having been boots on the ground over there for a long period of time, his entire military career. The only thing that I can say is when I want to go to the source, I go to Jim. Jimmy, when this whole thing over between Israel and Hamas started, the Associated Press came out and said and gave examples that there were war crimes, in a sense, being committed by both sides. You want to comment on that?
Well, I think you have to start with the definition of a war crime, and that's basically an action carried out during war that is against international rules or standards. There's no real definition of a war crime that is generally accepted by everybody. Mm-hmm. Only people that sign into certain, like the Geneva Convention or certain treaties. So it's a bit ambiguous and a bit rich for the AP to make that type of a comment, to be the judge and jury on what constitutes a war crime. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I'm going to say about the AP is the AP has been operating out of Gaza for a long period of time. Their building, the Israelis destroyed the building that housed their AP offices, as well as Al Jazeera. When they did that, they gave warning and had everybody exit the building. The reason why the Israelis said that they did it was because they say that there was a Hamas intelligence offices operating out of that building, and that there had been actual video footage of rockets being fired from that building in previous times by Al Jazeera reporters, or at least by foreign reporters or other regional reporters. So the fact that the AP was operating under Hamas, which is an internationally recognized terrorist organization, certainly by the United States, as well as almost all other Western nations, the fact that they would say that there was war crimes being committed and then, you know, going through this effort really shows a questionable sense of judgment on their part. And the fact that they've been removed from their offices and their ability to actually do reporting was controlled by Hamas while they were in those offices makes all of their reporting questionable in my view. Because bottom line is, they would not be able to operate efficiently without supporting and responding to a very brutal ruling elite, Hamas. So they're basically, their information is compromised, and you can't really trust it.
You know, I think the only comment that I can make is this whole thing is getting so messy right now that it's just, I mean, what's going on in our society right now is absolutely amazing in terms of political correctness. Let me give you an example of that. In my opinion, Tom Clancy's best book was Without Remorse. Patriot Games was also very, very good. But Without Remorse, where he introduced a very interesting character, was a book that I couldn't put down. I tried to watch the politically correct movie Without Remorse last night. And both Kathy and I said, this is silly, we're not going to watch it. We got in for about the first 20 minutes. It bore absolutely no resemblance to the book. The main character in the book, John, played by Michael, a little short-term memory lapse here, the basketball player, basically turned it into a politically correct total misinterpretation of one of Tom Clancy's greatest books. I'm sure that had Mr. Clancy had to give approval for that particular movie in order to use his name, he would have never done it. And I think that is a travesty towards our society, personally, Jimmy. Any comments I know we're getting into things outside of the Middle East here, but it just makes me very sad because I think it's hurting our country.
Well, what you're seeing is this incredible push for political correctness, and you're seeing this very interesting combining of different agendas that are completely inconsistent.
Right.
And it has to do with the Middle East. And here's the example. So what we've got is a number of riots and protests happening very large in New York, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, with people providing support to the Palestinians, Free Palestine, and getting very angry, and attacking Jewish people and Jewish protests supporting Israel, attacking and beating Jewish people. Now, here's the dilemma. A lot of the people that are out there being active for the pro-Palestinian efforts are leftists that are associated with Antifa and, of course, BLM movement. And those right. are the people that are being mobilized to act. But they're also very strongly LGBTQ, pro-transgenderism, all these different ideas. Well, in the Middle East, go ahead and try that. You'll be thrown off a building. You'll be thrown off a roof. The ideologies between the left are being driven by two completely different views and then combining to just create havoc in the United States. And it's the fact that people don't see that inconsistency, and even the left doesn't see that inconsistency, is striking to me, the fact that we're allowing it. But most importantly, that the media is continuing to protect these very, like, unbelievably disparate views as, like, one voice, or trying to portray them as the victims. And it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, what they're doing right now, in my opinion, and I kind of didn't want to get into this, but I started, so I'll finish it, and that is, I want everybody who is listening right now to listen to segments 7 and 8 with Reverend Irwin. He wrote a book that he talks about in this particular issue. Basically, what he is saying is everything right now in terms of the left, and he draws very, very significant parallels between their philosophy and the philosophy of the Marxists. You got to listen to that. It's absolutely fantastic. Probably the best.
I agree.
Probably the best two segments, Jimmy, that I have ever done. He tells it like it is. Because he really doesn't care. And I have to say, I watched some other interviews yesterday of well-known celebrities who are card-carrying Christians, for lack of better terms. One guy who came out in total favor of Christianity and enthusiasm, interestingly enough, was Alice Cooper.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second hour of KER Politics. I'm going to devote this entire hour to a clergyman by the name of Reverend Irwin Lutzer. At one time, and perhaps even today, he is the pastor of the largest, I would call, Protestant church in Chicago, if you don't include the suburb. He's a well-known author. I have done a fair amount of research on Reverend Lutzer. He's a very well-known author. I have purchased actually 3 additional books that he has written because I have nothing but time for him. The name of this book, and you guys are going to love this. When I say you guys, I mean all the way from CFS Indiana up to Tony up in England. You're going to love this guy. I have read a large portion of his book. which is we will not be silenced. And I have to tell you, I cannot put it down. Reverend Lutzer, let's start out. Why did you write this book?
You know, I wrote this book when I began to realize that the radical left in America does not believe that America can be fixed. It has to be destroyed. Its institutions have to be destroyed. And then it will be rebuilt on a quasi-Marxist foundation. And on the other side of the revolution, there will be things such as income equality, the end of white supremacy, the end of racism. And so what I do is, and as you well know, there's a difference between classical Marxism, which brought about the revolutions in Russia and China,
right,
and cultural Marxism, which says we can achieve the same results incrementally. And so cultural Marxism says we have to capture the institutions such as education and the media and law and vote for the right people. We can bring it in. But Al, this is very important for your listeners to understand. What I do in the book, and indeed it is called, as you mentioned, We Will Not Be Silenced. I was afraid that the church was being shamed into silence. But anyway, what I do is I apply this and show that it is being worked out in the vilification of our history, how that America has to be condemned continually. Certainly racism is a scourge on America, but you'd think that that was the only thing that America was known for, and all of the positive achievements are left out.
That's right.
So I show how it applies to the vilification of our history. I also show how it applies to race. Now, Al, you know that here in the city of Chicago, there was a community organizer by the name of Saul Alinsky.
Right,
he was a committed Marxist, and he talked about the glories of Marxism. He knew that Marxism could be applied to race. And I talked with someone who worked with him, and he said that Saul Alinsky was not interested in solving problems. He used to say, don't solve problems, use them.
Right.
He said we had good methods by which we might be able to help the under-resourced communities here in Chicago. And he put a kibosh on that because he indicated that what we could do is to apply Marxism to race so that there would be continual, perpetual conflict until the oppressed overcome the oppressors. And that's why you have all these diversity studies in our universities today. They are not interested in anything like reconciliation. They are interested in a new form of racism that's based on the color of one's skin. They are opposed to Martin Luther King Jr., who said that we should not judge one another by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. So what you have is this applied to race. And by the way, the church here has a lot to say. Maybe you can ask me about that, because
of course
the church has an answer that secular people don't have. But then I also apply it to freedom of speech. Marxists believe that if you have freedom of speech, the capitalists will win because they will take advantage of freedom of speech. So what we have to do is to limit speech. It is the oppressors that should have freedom of speech. And that's why in our universities today, you have the LGBTQ community. They have unlimited freedom of speech, but conservatives are frozen out. So that also, and one of the most important chapters has to do with how propaganda works. I show that the purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their mind. And I show how that happens. And then we talk about the destruction of the family. One of the longest chapters is on socialism, where I show that socialism initially appears to be attractive, but why it cannot work. So that's the essence of the book, We Will Not Be Silenced.
Reverend Lutzer, I have to tell you from personal experience, sir, it's a great book. And that book convinced me to buy two or three additional books written by yourself, sir. What I would like you to additionally talk about, it's probably the most recent aspect of the book, portion, I guess I should say, of the book that I have read, is let's talk about the Marxist view on the family, first of all, because I think everybody can relate to that.
This is very critical. Marx believed that the family was a unit of oppression.
Right.
What people must understand is that for Marx, external oppression is the great enemy. If we just took away oppression, everybody'd live together in peace and harmony. So he saw that men oppressed their wives, parents oppressed their children, they took them to church. God was the ultimate oppressor.
Right, I remember
that. And so if we could do away with God and we could do away with this oppression, then of course we'd have peace and harmony. So Marxism has always been destructive of the family. Let's take Black Lives Matter. Do Black Lives Matter? Of course, all Black Lives Matter. And yet the organization that takes that mantra, if you look at their webpage, they had in it that they believe in the dissolution of the nuclear family because they are Marxists. So we must understand that the family in Marxism has to be destroyed. Women have to get outside the home, and then the government has to raise the children so that the children are raised with atheism, with socialism, and so forth. And so that all is rooted in Marxism.
I want to say one thing, Reverend Lutzer, and that is I want to stress personally that Marxists believe wholeheartedly that the ultimate oppressor is God. And I have a problem with that. I have some very good Jewish friends, and I know you believe in the Judeo-Christian philosophy, and some of the most adamant people who I have on the program who are absolutely against, they have written books similar to We Will Not Be Silenced. Perhaps not as good, but they have written books similar to that. And I want to say that they are absolutely adamantly on your side. So for our Jewish audience, this guy, Reverend Lutzer, is not against you in terms of his, what I would have to call, macro philosophy. He is looking out for absolutely the best of our country, for our country. Reverend Lutzer, we've only got about 30 seconds left here, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up, and I'm going to say that anybody who does not buy this book is missing perhaps one of the greatest reads of our time. I'm going to put a live link on the site this weekend. You can order the book directly from Amazon. You simply have to read it. Ladies and gentlemen, a real quick commercial break, news break. Big Al's going to be right back with Reverend Irwin Lutzer. Hey, welcome back. Chatting again with Reverend Irwin Lutzer. Reverend Lutzer, your book is perhaps the most important book, as I said at the end of my last segment, that I have read within the last couple of years. It's an incredible book. Let's continue talking about it.
Yeah, you know, and as I mentioned in the first segment, I show how cultural Marxism is changing America. I'd like to talk about the chapter that I wrote in the book on the topic of propaganda.
Yes, sir.
I mentioned earlier that the purpose of propaganda is to so shape people's view of reality that even when confronted with a mountain of evidence, they will not change their minds.
Right.
So the question is, how do they do this? First of all, propagandists always need an enemy. And if you don't have an enemy, you make them up, because what you need is somebody to oppose somebody whom you hate, somebody whom you can exploit. So having done that, and certainly, you know, I wrote a book on Hitler. It's entitled Hitler's Cross. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Hitler knew how to do this, because what he talked about is the need for hatred. He says mere dislike is not enough. But here's the other thing. This is so critical for your audience to understand. The cancel culture has been used in Russia and also in Germany. Here's what happens. In Russia, it was perfected. It was called cultural demonization.
Yes, sir.
In other words, if there was a dissident and Russia said, you know, there's a dissident here, everybody agreed. They wrote letters condemning the dissident, even if they didn't know who he was. In Nazi Germany, churches put up swastikas on their doors saying, when you come for the Christians, don't come for us, because we are on your side. Now you look at what is happening in America, where somebody is deplatformed, and you have big tech and big government in cahoots with one another, working towards one another, censoring ideas that they don't like, and trying to control the culture. The other thing that Hitler did, and he did very effectively, is he would use language to clothe evil. For example, when he starved children, he called it putting them on a low-calorie diet. When he talked about killing the Jews, he spoke about the cleansing of the land. So in the very same way today, words are being cut off from their meanings, and George Orwell certainly pointed this out.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, even this idea of pronouns, where you don't know whether this person wants to be called thee or him or her or they or whatever, all that also intimidates us. And that's why I wrote the book that we are discussing, We Will Not Be Silenced, because I think it's very important for us to stand up against this and to take the consequences. The fact is, we are at a period of history where we cannot simply retreat into silence. I make the statement that students in our universities today, many of them will not be talked out of their faith, but they will be mocked out of their faith. So it is very critical that parents know how to instruct their young people. We need to prepare them for this culture which is collapsing around us.
Right.
And so what you have today is a lot of propaganda. I consider it as cultural streams, and those streams are so powerful that if you in any way speak against them, you can be in trouble. But here's the point. We have to be willing to do that and to take the consequences. And then, Al, you know, in the book, I also talk about the sexualization of children. I speak about socialism. Can I say a word about socialism?
You know what? You can say more than a word. We have close to 5 minutes left, Erwin.
Okay.
I have no intention of stopping you.
All right. You know, socialism. I point out that socialism is very attractive because we all want free college. We want free health care, free this and free that. But have you ever noticed that socialists always talk about how to divide the wealth? They never talk about how to create wealth.
Right.
Because socialism cannot create wealth. The only way wealth is created is for the government to print money. I've been in socialistic countries, even in the 1980s, Russia and so forth, and, you know, you would have a million marks might buy you an ice cream cone and so forth. So what happens is the government prints money. And that's exactly, of course, what is happening today, because there's no way for you to be able to create wealth because it stifles creativity. Well, let me put it this way. When we were in Russia in about the mid-80s, what we found was that there were doctors in the hospital, and they were being paid essentially the same wage as other people who worked in the hospital. Is it any wonder that there was a shortage of doctors? People have to understand that in a socialistic society, your money does not belong to you. It belongs to the state, and the state determines how to give it out so that there is income equality. Well, what happens, of course, is it institutionalizes greed, and it causes a whole bunch of problems, and people are stifled, and they take advantage of the system. Since you mentioned that you have Jewish friends that are listening, there is a kibbutz in Israel that thought, we're going to run this kibbutz on the basis of socialism. So they had everybody gets paid the same, everybody gets fed in the same dining room. People so misused it, there were those who slept in the morning, they didn't do any work, but they got paid the same. They brought their dogs to the tables, because after all, you know, everything is free. They kept the lights on when they didn't need it, and they had to give up the experiment because they said it became a paradise for parasites.
Right.
And that's what socialism does. I think it's Churchill. I hope I can quote him accurately here. He said, the great vice of capitalism is the unequal distribution of blessings. But the great benefit of socialism is the equal distribution of misery.
Right.
So as we think about socialism, we have to understand that we are being sold here a bill of goods.
Of course
it seems attractive, but of course the way it's brought about is that the government prints money, and that of course leads to inflation, and all that you can do after that is print more money. So it's very important that people understand that, and that we stand against the socialistic ideas here in America and what is happening right now in our government.
You know, I want to say one thing. You got a bit more time, if you don't mind taking some more time. Say whatever you want. You got one more minute, Reverend, and I'd like you to wrap it up, and then I have something I want to say.
I would simply wrap it up this way. In the book, We Will Not Be Silenced, I talk about all these things. I also talk about the response of the church, that we have to be willing to be obedient and take the consequences. In America, we've always lived with the idea that we were going to have freedom, and I show how those freedoms today are being compromised,
yes, in sir.
Both legally as well as culturally. We've always had freedom, and we've always thought to ourselves, it's going to be this way. Well, it's no longer this way, and what we need to do is to take the consequences. Solzhenitsyn told his people, don't live by lies. So don't be intimidated by the culture. Stand against it. If you get canceled, consider that a badge of honor. We cannot go along with what is happening. We must push back, and as we do, others will see our example.
It's absolutely imperative that we push back. Throw out some of the daily editorials that I've done recently, because I don't think a lot of you understand what I'm trying to say. If you listen to the editorial I did on Wednesday, you know that I'm very conservative. My liberal friends know that I'm very conservative. I'm sure that Reverend Erwin Lutzer knows that I'm conservative. I basically just want to wrap this up by saying one thing. You have to read the book, We Will Not Be Silenced. It makes all the sense in the world. Back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.